Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And I've been doing it for a while and interviewing a lot of people that are known to the public, but I think there's so many people awakening and so many people that may not be so well known that are doing, in a way, the hard work to help our consciousness evolve, to help our society evolve, to expose things that don't work in the old paradigm, and how things can work for a future that we're all building together. So that's why I'm talking tonight to Donna Novak. Hi, Donna. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, I mean, you are a warrior for consciousness, and we don't have to go through your whole story, but the part that I'd love for you to talk about is your transformation. You were a nurse working at a hospital in New York, and something woke you up. Like, you know, maybe you were awake before that, but something showed you what was really going on in the system, and how it could be different. How much of that do you want to talk about?
Definitely awakened or woke up from the false self that I believed myself to be, and I'm still evolving, and I think I will always be on a journey of evolution of consciousness. But essentially I was completely absorbed in my career as a critical care nurse in an emergency room in the city in Manhattan, and
before you get into what happened, I just want to know, were you pretty much like a regular person? Did you go 9 to 5? You didn't really think about consciousness or spirituality. Were you sort of a regular person?
As you described. I was just working full time, doing shift work, coming home, going to work. I was also a hardcore, outspoken atheist. Mm-hmm. And essentially, all that I knew myself to be was my career. And
why was your career so important to you? I'm just curious.
I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that I, firstly, I was raised in a very religious upbringing.
My Jewish, school, right? Orthodox.
Jewish Orthodox, although it was mainly at school and partly at home. A lot of what I was taught never really sat with me very well. I had a lot of questions that went unanswered. And in the schooling that I was raised in, we were taught that we can never question the Torah, that we can never question God. And if I was ever to ask a question, I was told, who are we to question God? Can a man ever question God? No.
And especially not a woman, of course. Right?
Even more so, not a woman. So a lot of that education made me actually rebel against the very idea of God. And especially because the questions that I had no answers. It was essentially educational indoctrination of religion. And
most people stay that way. They never wake up. I mean, I feel sort of bad for those people that are indoctrinated and then believe that their whole life, because they're never given a chance to breathe, to become themselves.
That's true, and most of the people, if not all of the people that I grew up with, are still there. I can only think of one or two that have broken away, and they are mostly shunned by the community.
Of course, because you're threatening their doubt. You know, that if you wake up, if you say, hey, something's going on, then, you know, it brings up all their doubts, and people don't want to doubt what they have chosen, you know, or what's been given to them. Anyway, but you, what did you think of people who had these like spiritual ideas? What were you, when you were an atheist? What did you think? They were just foolish or stupid or, you know,
yeah,
out of touch?
All of the above and more. I was extremely judgmental and critical of them, and I'm ashamed to say it, but I'm honest enough that I will say it. I just could never. I didn't identify with them at all. I thought that they were delusional, and all I could see was, it's really sad, really. Life was just some kind of an existence that I was thrown into by some random chaotic event that happened in the universe.
And so, oh, right. So then, so you were really into also working out your body, getting that in shape, because when you don't have anything else beyond that, then you value what at least you do have, right? Is that sort of your thinking in a way?
Yeah, I don't know. Working out was just, I mean, yeah, I definitely like to work out. A lot of that was really, it's a form of escape, I think. Some people, going to the gym and like grinding yourself for 2 hours every night is just an escape from yourself, from everything.
It's like a drug in a way, you're saying.
It is very much like a drug, and it actually even can be quite addictive.
So there you were working critical care, and I'm sure you were really good, and I'm sure you helped a lot of people, and you were, in a way, selfless like that. I mean, you were dedicated to, you know, people, which is beautiful. Even though you were an atheist, you were cared about people. And you, I'm sure you did it. You were a nurse because you were a caring person.
Even though I was an atheist, I was passionately, passionately empathic and towards people, always. That was, to me, you did not have to have God to love and care for humanity. There was no correlation between the two for me.
And is that why you were a critical care nurse? Because you really loved and cared about people? Is that what motivated you?
From the very youngest age I can remember, I wanted to be a nurse, but I had a completely different vision. I never really envisioned myself working in a hospital in a city at all. I always had these visions of being in like a third world country, you know, feeding hungry children, immunizing babies. I don't know. I had like these grand visions of like doing extraordinary humane acts of like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's beautiful. You could still do that. You could, but anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you were, you know, really, I get it. And I think that's great. I mean, I think nurses, I've seen people in hospitals and, you know, families, members, and they are really, a good nurse is really invaluable, to a patient's health and well-being. And there's so much they're very hardworking. I mean, they are there. So I think it's one of the hardest jobs around to do that. You know, it's really like, wow, these people are amazing. So I really do. It's like, they should be paid millions of dollars for doing everything they do to take care of the people who can't take care of themselves. So, but something happened, and we can go into that a little bit, that suddenly woke you up. And that's a really interesting point of change and transformation. Do you want to talk about a little bit of that?
Sure. Well, I was, in a nutshell, a whistleblower when I witnessed an event where a patient was denied treatment in the emergency room. he was homeless and in a wheelchair, and he had taken a drug overdose, and he was pleading for help, but he was denied treatment, and he was essentially escorted out of the emergency room and found dead in his wheelchair just hours later.
Let me just get that clear. So hospitals are, if anyone comes into a hospital, if they have money or not, if they're homeless, isn't a hospital required, or I don't know, because I don't know what happens there, to take the patient?
Yes, there is, absolutely. The emergency rooms are not allowed to turn people away. There are laws called EMTALA laws, which is, I never remember the whole acronym, emergency medicine trauma. I don't know the whole acronym, but it's a federal law called EMTALA, where every patient without question is entitled to emergency medical care.
So this hospital broke the law then by turning this patient away.
Absolutely.
And all the people that were, you know, responsible for turning the people away are really, they're criminals in a sense, because they they broke the law.
In my mind, they are, and in the eyes of the law, they are. There are still investigations that are ongoing now with the district attorney's office, with the New York State Attorney General, the Inspector General. I don't know. All these investigations are pending, so I won't.
Were you, like, horrified? Here you are. You know, you dedicated your life to people in a very, you know, selfless way. And here's somebody who needs help. And the hospital, the organization you're working for, suddenly says, no, not this person. I mean, what was your first response? I mean, how did you feel about At the time they said, were you shocked?
Oh, I was arguing with everybody there. There was a whole long stretch of time where I was pleading with the staff members to treat this man. I wanted to treat him. In fact, I started to treat him, but they did not want him in the resuscitation room. They did not want to allocate him a cubicle. They left him sitting in his wheelchair in the hallway, just in the middle of the hallway for like a long duration of time. They told him that he was not a priority. Mm-hmm. They kept insinuating that he was manipulating the system, that all he wanted was a free sandwich and a bed to lie on.
And like, that's a bad thing, too, you know? You know, that's like...
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like that's a crime.
They're refusing to treat. What was the reason they gave for not? How many people were involved, and what was the reason they gave for not treating him?
I had to guesstimate, there were probably 10 to 15 staff members, which included the attending physician, resident doctors, interns, nurses. The charge nurse was there. Nursing assistants.
None of those people except you said we should treat. They all conspired to get rid of it. Is that happened? You're saying all 10 to 15 people?
Yeah, I don't know. But I wouldn't go as far as to say conspired, but they all unanimously agreed that he was manipulating the system. They said that he was faking. They didn't believe that he'd taken an overdose, even though he had told us very specifically the drug he'd taken, the dose he'd taken.
died in the wheelchair right at the entranceway to the hospital, what did those people say then after, you know?
I'm sorry, I'm coughing
a little bit. It's okay. But I'm just curious because I would say those people are responsible for criminal negligence. I mean, that's like, you know, if they're not doing their job, which is to take care of people, and someone's asking for help, and the guy ends up dying in the lobby, in the entranceway to the hospital, there's something strange going on about that, where he's not even, they're not even attempting to help him. But, I mean, when they finally found him there, were they saying, oh, you were right, we're sorry? I mean, what was their response?
Their response when they found him was to rush him into the resuscitation room and try to resuscitate him. And, of course, he was already dead. They did not say sorry. They essentially, they did everything they could to cover it up is what they did. And they are still doing
that. What did they
do
to cover it? Like, what did they do? Like, what kind of things?
Well, they, first of all, they did not tell his family the entire truth of his coming to the emergency room. They lied to the medical examiner. They told
They didn't tell the medical and the family that he was there before and he was turned away. They did not say that.
No, they intentionally did not say that. They also intentionally lied to the medical examiner, and they also intentionally did not permit me to speak to the medical examiner, even though the medical examiner wanted to directly interview me, because I was the nurse that triaged him, and I was the last person to correspond with him. But they refused to allow that. And then there was a lot of other, they didn't reprimand any staff members. They pretty much marginalized me in my job. They bullied and harassed me, and it ultimately terminated me on a false pretext.
Wait, so not only were they guilty of this person dying, but they covered it up and sort of almost made it look like your fault. I don't know. They didn't quite make it look like your, but they covered up their own negligence, which of course compounds their crime.
Yeah.
You know?
That's exactly what happened. They covered it up, and they still are continuing to do that.
It's sort of shocking in a way, isn't it?
To me, it was shocking when it all happened, but now enough time has passed that I see the pattern in the system, and the way these things occur, the way corporations lie and psychologically manipulate staff members into being fearful to speak the truth, and I see it as a very systematic thing that probably goes on every single day. No one
says anything about it, except people like you who are more concerned with life than corporations. But where else, I mean, how do you see this pattern? So it happens in this hospital. Would you say it happens in a lot of hospitals? How do you see that pattern in the world?
I see it. The reason that I say that I see it is because I won an arbitration and I was reinstated to my job. Mm-hmm. And since I've been employed again at the same place, I've been retaliated against, but it's not so much about me so much as I see the systematic methods that they use to instill fear in the staff members.
Like what? Could you be specific?
It's all of the policies and procedures. They have a book called A Code of Conduct. There's a lot of threats of discipline. You know, staff members that don't do this will be disciplined. Staff members that do this and that will be disciplined. Even the actual corporate hierarchy is one that's just built on fear. I mean, most of the nurses in the emergency room have a level of fear of the management, and the nurse manager has a fear of the head of critical care, and the head of critical care is afraid of the director of critical care. And then it goes, there's like a chain of command, and there's a whole, like, I don't know what the word is I'm trying to think of. It's like a ladder.
Hierarchy.
It's a hierarchy. It absolutely is, but it's structured with a lot of fear tactics.
But you weren't aware of this when you were just doing your job, right?
Well, you kind of, they do it in a way that gives you the illusion of autonomy and the illusion of, everything's great. As long as things run smoothly and as long as everything's fine, you kind of can work within this system. But there is still, there is always that fear. But when something like this happens and it requires someone to speak up and speak the truth, often a person will be just terminated or disciplined. And even just being disciplined will make someone fearful of ever speaking up again.
Right. I'm just wanted to interrupt because you said code of conduct. If they don't follow a certain code of conduct, but the hospital itself didn't follow a code of conduct.
Exactly.
It's ironic.
That came up in the arbitration many times over, that they don't follow their own policies. In fact, the arbitrator clearly called them out on this. And
what was their response?
They didn't have much of a response to that. They even had to openly admit it to a degree.
They admitted they were at fault in negligence in this person who died in that wheelchair, right?
That they did not admit. They will never admit that openly and loudly. However, they have had to admit it to the Department of Health and to CMS and to the medical examiner and to
and to the family of the guy, right?
That's correct. The family as well, who closed a settlement with them late last year. But publicly, they have never admitted to it. It's all still tied up in investigations. They were sanctioned by the state and federal government. They were forced to change policies and create new policies to prevent this from happening in the future.
But thanks to you, though, they did that. I mean, isn't that amazing that you just one person were able to maybe save, future people's lives because of this action?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I hope that many lives are saved. I pray that this will never happen again.
Well, yeah, I hope so too. But all right. But then this happened, and it's horrible. But how did this all lead to your spiritual awakening? Because what happened inside of you in this whole thing that went down?
Well, when I was terminated, which was very sudden, I was pulled into a meeting and just told in an instant that I'm terminated. And I'd been employed there since August 2006 with an immaculate record. And
how many years later were you terminated? How long did you work there?
All in all, now we're going on to 8 years, nine.
But how
years.
Long were you working there before you were terminated?
I think like 5 years, roughly 5 years. I was a senior nurse. I'd never been disciplined. I was like nothing. I had a perfect employment record and, just doing what I do. But then I suddenly come home and I'm no longer employed. I'm no longer making $100,000 a year income. I'm suddenly not able to pay my rent, not able to pay bills. I'm no longer a registered nurse. I'm also in a foreign, I don't have a, I'm from Australia on a work visa. So I didn't have the luxury of just going and applying for another job. Mm. It's a little bit more complicated when you don't have a green card. And and on top of that, I was in the middle of an arbitration with the union that dragged on for a very long time. So during that period, I sat here in my little studio apartment and just, I can't even really explain it, but I guess that's what they call the shift. But I started to realize I'm no longer a nurse. I mean, I'm no longer working as a nurse. I'm no longer making all. I'm not making this money. I'm not a lot of the things that I thought I was. Yet I'm still here. So then, what am I? And I went through a whole period of being completely lost. Like, I just didn't know what I am, who I am, why I'm here. What am I here for? And I actually went to see a shaman, and that's really when everything's. That's a whole story in itself.
Well, but what did the shaman do? Did you do like a ceremony with the shaman, or did he do a healing, or?
I spent nearly a month. In Asheville, North Carolina, with a shaman, and there were lots of ceremonies and lots of different types of choking. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. But, I know you have a little cold or a cough or something, but but
essentially, all began with the question of "Who are you?" which was the first question he asked me, and my initial response was my name, and he said, no, I don't care what your name is, who are you? And then I said, well, I was born in this country, and I was this and that, I'm Jewish. He said, no, who are you? Who is the person standing here in front of me? And then I said, well, I'm a nurse. And he said, no, who are you? And I started to say, well, I have a brother, and I have... And he said, no. And he kept insisting, who are you? And I basically had no idea how to answer him. And it began with that. And it's actually a long story.
No, but it's a great story. It's a great teaching. I mean, you don't have to go through all of it, but it's a great teaching for people who are still, and most people, identified with their label, their job, their children, their family, their name, their religion. It helps them wake up. So what happened? Did something just crack open in you at that point?
I learned from him about my higher self, which is something that I'd never knew of before. I realized completely that I was none of the things that I had identified myself as, not my name, not my nationality, not my language, not my occupation, not even my family. I was just essence. I was he explained to me that I am the essence of myself. And
No, but how did you get that? He explained it, but what I'm always curious at that moment of awakening, how did you really get that you were the essence? Like, what happened?
It was a long process. It wasn't like this or that. I started to meditate, and in meditation, the more I became focused, like he would teach us to focus and to go within, and the more I would meditate, the more things would become clear and apparent to me. And the more, I think a lot of it just came through meditation and finding out from inside myself, I first of all, I realized that not only there is a God, that God is in me, that I am God, that we are all God, and that everything is God, and God, Source, the Creator, whatever word people like to use, I actually experienced it. It was no longer just a concept or something that I was told I must follow and believe blindly. I actually started to fully experience the divinity of my own self, the divinity of my own being.
Through meditation, you started to get aware of that.
So, through meditation and spending time with this shaman, and also through having lost my entire ego was annihilated. I mean, my whole title, my job, my career, my income, everything that I was just annihilated in a heartbeat. Like, it was all taken from me. All the falseness that I believed was who I was no more. And
Hospital did you a great favor, because if this thing had never happened, and they never, you know, if they would have just done, you know, what they should have done, then you would probably just still be there, an atheist, unconscious to this huge potential.
Completely.
Interesting. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? In the way that guy, I don't know if you want to say sacrificed himself, but there was something he did for you.
Yeah, he was an angel who came into my life to teach me this great lesson. And as are the hospital, you know, I learned a great lesson in life, they're my teachers. I don't see them as my enemy. I see them as my teachers. I learned the greatest lessons from them.
Thank you for saying that, because most people would be very angry. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's still a lot of that old stuff, but, you know, you're grateful, which is beautiful. I'm curious about, like, okay, you're working with the shaman, and then in your meditation, what was the first thing that you noticed to give you an experience that there was more to you than you had thought?
It was a few things, but it was a lot of the things that my shaman explained to me. I don't like to say my shaman, but
he's just your guide. He's a teacher, a guide. I mean, we all need guides and teachers. So,
it was when I had a particularly difficult upbringing as far as my family is concerned, and I won't go into all the details, but had a difficult family life as a child, and I've spent most of my life like a little bit like a nomad. I've lived in Thailand, Israel, Australia, London, New York. I've been alone and always feeling like, where do I belong? Where is home? Why am I here? And I think I'm going to cough. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, take care of yourself. I'm talking to Donna Novak, who's telling an incredible story about her transformation. So go ahead. Yeah, so you lived all over the place. You were wandering. Maybe you were escaping from your family, whatever. And then you sat still, maybe for the first time.
I realized that all of this is a story. It's not me. I'm sorry. Maybe you want to speak. I'm here.
No, but Javier is also there. Javier Gonzalez, who's a friend of Donis, who's also had an amazing transformation. I wanted to get to Javier. But if Donna, are you okay?
She's good. She's good. Oh. Sorry, Adam.
No, don't be sorry. It's fine. Javier, does she want to take a break?
She's had a horrible cough.
No, that's okay. But we'll get back to Donna because I wanted to talk to you anyway because in some ways you had a sort of similar story about your awakening as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I think that's the part of the process is that we all have similar stories to share, like in many different levels of society, but we all come collectively together to share our stories, to know that, hey, we have different but similar and we're not alone, right?
Well, exactly. But why don't you share a little bit of your story of how you went to the Army and, you know, you were overweight and unconscious. I mean, we all come from unconscious. No, we all were brought up, you know, not to be conscious beings, but to be kept unconscious. But yeah, I'm interested in your awakening. You want to share a little bit about, you know, what happened to you, where you were, what your transformation?
Yeah, sure. I was a military police in the Marine Corps for 5 years.
Why did you join the Marines?
Well, I was born in Cuba. I came when I was around 7 years old. And I thought, like, in the educational concept of things, I did grade, I think it was grade 3 to grade 12. The whole media, the advertisements, our holidays, like, I felt like we are indoctrinated into feeling that this is the highest form of service that we could possibly create when we're kids.
So right, at age joining seven, the Army, joining the military is the highest form of service because you're protecting people from whatever.
Right, because I was an immigrant. I felt like I needed to give to this country so much because I came from a second world country that didn't have the pleasures of the materialistic concepts that we have here in America. So
you wanted to join the Army, sort of like Donna wanting to be a nurse. She wanted to give back to people.
Exactly. Yeah,
okay,
that's what it was. So I wanted to give back, and at the time, going through high school and stuff, I walked in into a recruiter's office one day. I never expected to really join, but he sold me on it.
How did he sell you? What did he say you would happen to you?
The way that they sell it is that they give you a bunch of flashcards, and they're like, what do you want to do with your life? And they have this huge, they've been studying our minds, Alan, for a really long time, and they know exactly what makes our minds tick. They know how our dreams work, especially of a kid. You know, it's way more easier to convince a 17, 18-year-old kid that's been, you know, introduced to these figures as to be heroes. I'm in front of a hero, and he's like, what do you want to do? You want to be just like me? You want to do this, this, or that? We could do everything for you if you join the service. Every avenue is open for you if you do this thing.
Wow. You know, the thing about that is even the guy that's telling you that is already brainwashed by the system. You know, he doesn't even know it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, afterwards, I realized that I worked with a lot of those guys. Mm-hmm. I worked with a lot of those guys, and I realized, hey, they're all just like every one of us, and they're really no different.
So what happened to you? So you join, you go up, you sign up. Was it ever like a good experience for you? Did you ever enjoy it?
Well, don't get me wrong. I had a great experience. I made great friends. Like, there's great people in there. Like, I think the concept is that a lot of times there's a big division being created in the United States, and it revolves around these people are asleep or these people are awake, and, like, you know, that we have to shake them up to awaken them. But the thing is that there's good people everywhere. You have good experiences everywhere. But the psychological indoctrination happening inside our military is that akin to Nazi Germany. They're taking the science from it, and they're brainwashing us into different perspectives to a level of extremism even of itself. If you turn on...
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean even like not? Because that's a pretty extreme statement, because I think the Nazis were probably the most evil force that ever existed on the planet. I mean, there's a lot of people still doing that kind of Nazis, but how do you say that our military is equal to that? I mean, where do you... Where does that come from?
It's actually a buildup. They're not bad people, as in, but there's a buildup of extremism, especially what's happening now. If you turn on Fox News, you're going to see a veteran talking about how Muslims need to be wiped out of the world because so-and-so, because they're all terrorists. And inside the military-industrial complex, this thought is pervaded constantly. It's a constant perversion, and you believe it. And even inside, you know, there's this concept that civilians, the very people that we're protecting, are asleep to these things. They don't know all the service we're doing, and we even call them, you know, we used to call them dirty civilians. They don't know what they're doing, right? It's a concept that's pervaded.
Wait, then you call people who are not in the military dirty civilians?
Right. That's a,
because,
in the Marine
because
Corps,
of why? What's their attitude?
Yes, that's a concept that's used at least in the lower ranks, because they're like, you know what, you've been trained to kill, you've been trained to be a killer, you know, the Uncle Sam.
And that's
has
a good thing, right, that you've been trained to be a killer, right?
Yeah, that's one thing that they promote, that you, while you're in this, you know, you're in this brotherhood and you think it's so cool and, yeah, you know, I'm so strong and I'm so powerful and I'm part of something bigger than myself. But in the back of my head during that whole time, there's always like there's something that doesn't quite click. I've always been someone who poses questions to the system and to the established thing, and that's something that didn't click well with me. So it adds stressors and it adds your own superiors, they don't like that. They don't like people who pose questions.
Even though, but you weren't spiritual either at that point, right? You weren't
I mean, we're all spiritual to a certain degree, but I wasn't understanding of my purpose into this world, as in to shed light through my spirit as far as this is concerned. Like, I always raise questions as, is there like a group of entities here trying to persuade us to be less than what we really could be? Like, this is always, and I had conversations with people in the military about this, and this is like something that happens in the watering hole, you know, a type of gossip that happens within all the ranks. So that is, if there is really a group of people maneuvering us and indoctrinating and manipulating our minds, but inside, well, we're inside, we really don't understand the real severity of it. The real severity.
Wait, did people agree with you that there's some force manipulating your mind? Did you get an agreement of that among the military?
Yes, I got some agreements, yes. And like always, some people will be like, man, you're crazy, and that's crazy, because it's a very hard pill to swallow.
Most people, even, you know, in the world, don't realize that, you know, politics are manipulated. It's all manipulated by something that is unseen, that we don't even know, you know?
Absolutely. So there's always people like you and me, there's always people like Donna, there's always people born here that no matter what profession they choose, they're going to see the manipulation through the indoctrination in all levels of society that occurs on the inside of the military. It's a harder pressed indoctrination, but when you come to the civilian world, you find out that corporate indoctrination is just the same, and societal indoctrination is just the same. Capitalistic indoctrination is just the same. It revolves around the same type of fractal wrongness.
Fear as well. It revolves around fear, doesn't it, like Donna said?
Absolutely. The fear of how am I going to pay my rent? The fear of, like, what will people think of me if I have no car? Or the fear of who's going to pay my light bill or the internet or what type of phone? Like, I don't want a BlackBerry. I need an iPhone. Those types of fears generate the need for us to have to submit ourselves to this type of enslavement, mental enslavement.
Well, you know, you and Donna in some ways have very similar stories in some ways, you know. I mean, both went against it. So what was your moment of awakening? You're in the army, you're in the military police, you're eating junk food, you're overweight. Like you said, you lost, what, 100 pounds or something?
Yeah. Something like that, 80 pounds, something, 70 pounds.
Amazing. And so what woke you up, though? What was that moment where you said, oh, my God, there's something else going on?
Well, it was afterwards, after I had done my service. It was 5 years in, you know, like I was in Miami. I'm from Miami, and I was at the beach, and I was meditating, and I had just done a psychedelic trip of mushrooms, and I was in a deep state of meditation, and I was depressed at the time. I was trying to find myself. I'm like, I've suffered so much. I've been through so many things. I just did not need to know to find the articulation or the solution to it. So
Were you suffering in the army, though? Were you suffering?
I was suffering in it because I just didn't understand how to articulate. I was going through a hard stressors were being placed on me because of my weight, because of my decisions, because of the fact that I was speaking out towards the fact that I was seeing that, hey, all of this that we're all being subjected to is all BS. By year two, I was already the guy that they told you not to befriend.
In the Army, they said don't be friends with this guy?
Yeah, in the Marine Corps, they told us not to, you know, like if there's a certain troublemakers, they'll label us troublemakers, they'll label us dissidents, people that don't abide by the disciplinary code that they think makes a good person. Because if you don't follow their disciplinary ideals or rules, then they could move to make you look like you're not an acceptable person towards them. And then this places a stressor on you and it makes you feel like, am I not worthy for this? Because all these people feel like they're
but
great.
But you were in the military police, though, right? Does that?
Yeah.
But so
yeah,
even though they took.
That's what? Another reason why I was also questioning myself and the things that I was doing. Like, I never wrote a ticket as a military police because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm supposed to be ticketing my own brothers that I'm supposed to, like, you know, like, hold a rifle next to. Like, I don't understand what this police enforcement is doing, because I joined to be justice, to help people, you know, to like go to domestic disturbance, to like make sure that nobody got shot. But I wound up understanding that this rarely happens, and this is what's happening in New York as well, is you see that the police are not writing any more tickets because of the union, and it's stopping people from being arrested for nonviolent offenses, and our prisons are getting filled with people for nonviolent offenses because of the prison industrial complex that feeds off the police industrial complex, that feeds off the military industrial complex, because the police recruits the military people that have been indoctrinated into believing that civilians are, just as I told you, that they're very dangerous.
Civilians are dangerous. That's the idea in the military, too, that...
Well, that's the idea that's pervaded in the military police. So when you're military police, they'll tell you at any given moment, you know, you're susceptible to a disgruntled person, you being part of their terrorist attack or terrorist exploit. So the police, in one hand, are scared as a population. So this is what happens when they start shooting people, is because they're being fed these fears. They're being trained by outside agencies, and they're being fed fears of domestic terrorism. While civilians are being fed fears of police killing them. So it creates this very, very hard strain upon the population.
Right, so we're going to kill them before they kill us. Is that,
absolutely.
I mean, wow, it's so intense what you two are both saying and dealing with and exposing. It's amazing for me. It's an eye-opener because, you know, I'm not really connected with those situations or ideas, and it's like, but a lot of the world is, and you're exposing a huge window that, you know, just would stay shut unless you both came forward and said, well, you know, this is really how it is. This is really what's going on within the psychology of people, and I think it's important that this become public knowledge. Because how else are we going to change a system unless someone talks about it? So, I mean, so I think you're both doing an incredible service. So you're meditating on the beach. You did some psychedelics. And what happens to you?
And I was trying to find out myself, and I'm trying to find why is it that I'm depressed. And I realize it's because I have no self-love. It's because we've been imprinted with lacking self-love and self-worth, that if we lack these certain types of traits that they desire in us, we're not worthy. And I'm like, I realize, my God, that is absolutely not true. I love myself. I have to love myself. And in that understanding, then I understood at that time, well, if I'm looking for a solution to these things that I knew from such a long time, I have to realize that I am the solution. I've been placed into these things, just like Donna has been placed into these things, that we have to be the voice to the solution of the indoctrination and the mental enslavement that we are subjected to. And our consciousness, like yours, Alan, is contagious. And when people hear these stories, they're like, my God, this is exactly what's happening to me, and this is exactly what the articulation is, and like, I have my own story to share. And then that's how we could really start talking to our families through collective unity and cohesion.
Well, you are waking people up, because maybe there's someone listening who's so identified with being in, you know, the service somehow, or being a Marine, but they have these suspicions that, well, there's something a little off here. I know there's more. I know, or, you know, like Donna, you know, suddenly she's not a nurse and everything she's identified with is taken away, or you questioning, and then suddenly, you know, you're making it easier for other people to question their reality and wake up to this deeper side. So when did you discover there was this, maybe you always knew it, but there was this huge, deep spirit that was waiting to come alive in you?
Right. And like, what it was is that I just did not know how to articulate it. In a sense, we're being subdued into being introverts, into like being scared of saying what we need to feel. We're shown so many things that's not us, and when it's not us, we're like, well, that's not me, so like, I have to keep to myself, you know? So it wasn't until that time, and then after that, it was a process of really unhinging and unshackling everything I thought to be real or not. But I was like, I have to be myself. Like, you have to be yourself. You have to voice your opinions. You have to, like, speak to others, not in a violent manner, not calling other people sheep or asleep, but saying, hey, look, this is what I've experienced, and this is what, like, I've been going through, and what is it that you've been going through? It's like, we have to talk to each other.
Wait, so you're saying there's a huge brainwashing going on in the military, that in the military, people are told, this is really how it is. The people on the outside don't really know what's going on. We're right. We're protecting them. And we'll have to do anything it takes to protect these people. Is that sort of what happens?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And these are extremist ideologies that's pervaded all throughout. And after they get out, they pervade them wherever they go, because they believe themselves to be part of that secret outer party. That's what they are. If, like, you know, if you remember 1984, has inner party, outer party, and then proletarian. Well, when you become a member of the federal government, it's like you become a member of the outer party.
I actually didn't read that book, but
known a little bit of information that you think that is the correct information. You're given a secret clearance, or you're given this and that, and you don't know the whole information or the whole bit, but you think that this is it, you know, that this is what you need to do, because this is the stuff that most people are not being told.
But it also makes you feel important and special, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It makes you feel strong. It makes you feel empowered, like you belong to something bigger than yourself. It's a gang mentality of organized crime in of itself that is really dangerous and really corrupts our minds, unless that we really address ourselves, who we are, and the hatred that we carry inside us. Because honestly, what I carried inside me, Alan, was hatred towards myself and towards people, towards the way people acted, towards the way people were, and I had to address it, because that's really why I hated myself. That's why I was in a state of depression, and that's why there's so many homeless veterans with PTSD and a state of depression, because they don't understand what's happening with their minds. They don't understand how their minds were completely grabbed and then convoluted, and they don't know what's left or right. They don't know what's right or left.
Wait, I don't understand it either exactly. So tell me again. So they're in the army, they're in war, maybe they're in Afghanistan, and they're told what? That they're doing this for a noble cause, they're protecting the free war. I mean, but what, tell me, I mean, go into a little more detail about how their minds are manipulated. I mean,
even have to be in an act of war. You don't even have to be out in the desert with boots and a rifle. It's very, even at your very job, you could be a supply guy, you could be a cook, you could be whatever, you could be a military police, whatever it is that you're a part of, you know, like, you're constantly being instilled these things it's sort of like a fear-based thing, like, hey, look, these terrorists are here. There's always a form of terrorism, and then they create this they develop this false ideology of we need to do this. We need, this is what you need to do.
Well, who's saying this? I mean, who's exactly, what are they exactly saying? I mean, if you can, because I'm curious, how do they actually get people under their spell? So let's say you're not even on the front line, like you said, and you're like just helping supplies, or and who's saying this to the sergeant, or like what are they saying?
Well, it's not the sergeants. It's the culture. It's the cult in the culture. It's a cult developed around the whole culture. It starts in the training. It starts in the boot camp. It starts into the basic training that you are there to protect people, and you're there to go out and be the tip of the spear for protection. When you start questioning, they don't give you time to question. They just give you, hey, look, you have all these things are happening. There's all these terrorists afoot. They want to attack America. We need to stand strong and stand firm. It's sort of like Israel and Palestine. It's kind of like the same thing. It's the fractal of it. So what happens is, since this is happening and you have 5 whole years and now we have the internet, what's happening inside the military now is that like the enlisted service members are being put towards unnecessary stressors and disciplines. Like they discipline them and they commit, like they induce stressors upon them so they don't give them time to think critically. Like you don't
like
have
what
time
kind of stresses are they induced with?
Like, oh, you like silly things like you need to be here at certain time, or they out overwork you, or they make sure that you need to act a certain type of way or walk a certain type of way. Your uniform has to be a certain type of way. Constant uniform, dress uniform inspections.
So like, it's like they want robots in a way. They don't really care about people, their humanity, their feelings, right?
Yeah, they don't want you to think outside the box. They don't want you to go on the internet and look at politicians. They don't want you to look at what Obama's doing. They don't want you to know what's happening in New York. They don't want you to know what's happening with Bradley Manning or Snowden. Like, I had no idea what all this was going on while I was in the military, because I was so stressed out by constant disciplines and constant stressors that my job, like, quote-unquote, had me doing. And that's what happens, like, across all boards. Like, now, it's not happening to all people. There are many people who are awake and in the military, and poor them, because they woke up after being in there. But this is how they subdue people for, like, years and years. Some people give 20 years of their life, and all they know is their job, and then they go home, and it's a football game. Or they go home, and it's a workout.
It's kind of sad that that's, like, their existence?
It's an existence that's sad, yes, but it, like, I mean, I'm blessed to have broken free, and you're blessed to have broken free, and everyone that's blessed to be broken free, it's upon us to speak our minds and to say what's in our minds, because football is not all there is. Like, sports is not all there is. It's a yearly thing that's happening every year. It's one season after another while politicians sweep.
It doesn't mean anything either. It doesn't matter who wins or loses. It's its own fabricated universe. That's why it's like, I think sports is the most ridiculous thing. I mean, it's great athletic wise people can, you know, be in great shape and do amazing things, but so what? I mean, it's sort of meaningless in a way, sports.
It makes the mind of the human pretty much worthless, because we're consumed into stats of so-and-so scored so many points, instead of really realizing what the military, prison, police, industrial complex is doing to our families.
Right. But so you're saying, being in the military, they want you to, they're happy if you don't question, if you're basically a robot, they don't want you to feel anything. You can't say, well, I'm feeling very sensitive today, and I'm feeling sad. You can't say that in the military, can you?
No, I mean, there's no room for, like, sensitivity at all. Like, there's not, like, hey, I'm feeling this way about what we're doing. It always has to be we have to go out there and kill Hajis. You know, that's what we, like, it's a...
They say that? Do they say that?
Yeah, like, it's crazy stuff.
Kill Hajis means, like, Arabs?
Yeah, like meaning like we have to go out there and destroy these people. And there's very many different terms and many different like scary type of stuff that when you realize it and think outside the box, you're like, my God, this is its own form of extremism being put on young kids, because it's like really the kids that are being told this are age range regularly from 17 to 25.
Wait, so they're told exactly in the military, we have to go and kill those Hajis, is that the word they use?
I'm not sure if they use that word currently, but there's many different terms that they use.
Because if we don't kill them, they're going to kill us. Is that the sort of thinking that...
they're going to kill us. Somebody out there is training to kill you right now. You need to, like, be physically fit. They apply a lot of physical fitness to it, because the more time we spend on our physical fitness and ourselves... being physically fit, the less time we have to think about our actions and what we're contributing to, the gear of war.
Wow. That's so intense. And so people never get to think for themselves. So when they get out of the Army after having been traumatized by being on the front line, that's why there's so many suicides, I guess, among the veterans. It's epidemic.
Absolutely. It's 22 suicides of active duty, not even veterans a day. That's meaning that there's a lot of depression and alcoholism going in the military, because the soul knows, Alan. The soul knows that what we're doing.
Hello? Oops. Javier, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the phone. That was.
I thought I lost you for a second. I thought they took you out.
They know, like our soul knows that what we're being subjected to is not right, so it creates a space for depression and trauma and alcoholism and suicides. 22 active duty service members kill each other a day.
They kill each other or themselves?
Or themselves, I'm sorry, not each other.
They kill themselves
a day.
Suicide within the military, you're saying?
Yes, within the military, wow. Because of these things, because of the traumas. Because of the post-traumatic stress disorders, that you don't necessarily have to be in war to have them. You just have to be subjected to the stressors of this military stressed-out lifestyle that we're subjected to.
Wow. Do you feel
and
like part
as well.
Of... What were you going to say, Will?
Corporate as well. Donna is also subjected to such things. Anyone that's subjected to being outed from their job, to being... taken down from a position is also subjected to a post-traumatic stress disorder, because everything that they knew to be true is taken away, and then they have to like sort of try to float or swim and find themselves again. And if they don't find themselves, they go into alcoholism, they go into drugs, and they find an external vehicle to amplify this depression that they have.
But do you feel maybe it's your job to save some of these people, to create a space where you can detox them mentally and physically? Would you want to do that?
Well, I mean, I've been doing that with the people that I've known, the friends that I was a part of while I was in. I've been telling them when I woke up, I told them, listen, this is going to be me from now on. I've changed. I'm just going to be more articulate and verbal about what I believe in. And a lot of them have hated me for it. Like, but some of them have really appreciated me for coming out and saying what I have said. And some of them have, like, conned me the devil himself for, like, breaking all their ideologies that they once held to be clear, or trying to. Like, I can't really break them unless they believe it to be true themselves. But
depressed people who are killing themselves because they're so traumatized and they're so identified with such a empty sort of existence. I mean, could you save those people? I'm not saying you should, but I mean, could you?
Absolutely. I have friends who are a part of that movement that talks to depressed veterans. I'm always verbal about the military-industrial complex, whatever I meet. Whenever someone's like, oh, you're in the military, oh, that's awesome, you're a hero. I'm like, don't call me a hero, man. Just never do it, you know? Never, like,
submit
yourself
to the
will.
I mean, in a way, you did sacrifice a lot to be there. I mean...
Exactly. It's my sacrifice that I wish... I wish none of it to be on anyone. I had a time that I learned. I didn't have like a complete horrible time, and it wasn't like a complete hell, but it was a time in my life that I realized that this is not the type of thing that I want to be feeding, and it's not something that you wish your life to begin, because you don't know. You don't know what they might throw you in. You might not know when, if you might lose your life or not. You might not know the type of situations that you might be subjected to. And
Were you ready to go to war? Were you like saying, would you just say, okay, if this is what my country wants, I'm going to go to war? And
absolutely. I was never the type to be, I'm not going to go or I'm scared. I've always been the type to be like, well, I joined for a reason. And if like I'm sent, then by all means, let it be so. You know, like I signed up for a reason. Now, don't get me wrong. I didn't want to go, and I never had the mentality that to want to go and kill people. There are people in the military with that mentality, and it's something that is, if they don't go into the military with that mentality, then they're, a lot of times they're introduced to that mentality and they feed that mentality, and they want to go and be part of that action. They either have it or they don't. But I'm blessed to not, you know, I'm blessed to at least just keep it verbal and tell people, be an advocate for truth and tell people that this is not what it is. Wars have been going on for longer than this war. We're now in year 15 of this Iraq-Afghanistan war, and it's a war based on lies, pretty much.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for anyone to keep feeding this. But the thing is that the paycheck is good. It's a constant paycheck. So that's another thing that they told you while inside. They would say like, oh, while you're outside, the economy is so bad and you're not going to find a job. And this economic bubble that you're in is so good, and it's so good to be here. And so they make you scared to leave because you're like, well, the economy is so bad and this is a paycheck on the 1st and 15th. And this is pretty good money, you know, 40 grand, 35 grand. For a 25-year-old, 24-year-old kid is pretty
right.
good, you know?
And you don't have to pay rent, and all your food is taken care of, so you can put all that right in the bank, right?
Yeah, but really what happens is that you put that money towards alcohol because or partying because you're depraved, you're devoid of having an actual spiritual-filled life, because we really know on the inside, our soul knows what we're contributing to. So we try, like, to change it. We'll spend our money on unnecessary things. Some people do save their money, but
are you saying sort of the military takes our soul away, almost? It kind of buries our soul, like we lose the
right.
people.
Yeah, you can't take your soul away, but it buries it. It tries to block it.
And they're
like
intentionally
the
doing that. They know, like those forces that are in control know this is what we need to do to these people in order for them to go out and kill other people. And they know that,
right.
and both sides are thinking that, actually.
Both
aren't
sides
they?
Are very completely aware of that, Alan. If you understand that war has been going on for so long now that, like, the sides, the officers, the generals, there's a lot of generals that have come out in the end and have whistleblowed against this, saying that all it is a base off fear. But they know, like, while we are being put into war, there are scientists in there that are psychologically writing down and annotating all things that make us tick. They know how our minds work. They know what they could say, what they could do, how they could push us towards a certain will, and they know exactly what will make us want to kill another person. They know how to make us feel a certain type of way. Behind this war and behind the physical aspect of violence, what they're really doing is knowing how to subdue the mind of a person, and then they could come back to the civilian world and subdue the mind of the culture and the civilization in itself.
Wow. I'm getting depressed just hearing all this.
It's a beautiful thing because we're here, Alan.
No, I know, but this stuff really goes on. In a way, I think I have been sheltered or ignorant. I mean, I know what you're saying is true, but I just feel like, you know, there's so much, you know, strange people out there doing these things to take away people's humanity. And what's it all for? What are all these wars really for? Is it for money or greed or power? What's behind it, you think?
It's all for psychological control of the peasantry. It's all for, like, to control the serfs and the proletarians.
But what do people get? Like, the people who are controlling the proletariat and the what do they get from controlling these people?
Well, if they don't control them, like they have been controlling for like the past how many years you want to put on it, then
thousands.
What it happens is that people search for their own consciousness, and that's what's happening now, Alan. Like people, like we're becoming immune to this sort of psychological control, and that's why the evolution of consciousness is taking root in every nook and every cranny, whether it be the military-industrial complex or the police-industrial complex or even inside the prisons. Like we're becoming immune. Our souls are becoming immune to this. And so they're seeing that their control structure is not intact. So they have to tighten the grips of control and become more militaristic in itself. And they have to, like, pump out more reality TV shows. They have to pump out more false flags. They have to pump out more lies to feed people so people are kept in fear. Because if we're kept in fear, then through fear, they could control our evolution of consciousness. That's how they can control the stagnation.
No, I appreciate you saying, but what the people in power, what do they really get from control? What satisfaction do they get from controlling other people? That's the part I don't really get.
Why? Well, I believe, don't quote me on it, but I believe that there is an inner party, an inner class that is family and feudalistic base, that they're indoctrinated in their own ways separately from our own class, that they are thrown into this world of control, and they're told in different ways, well, this is what you need to do, this is what your family has done for so many generations, and this is why you need to do it in of itself, and then they blackmail them, and they have lives that are completely different than ours. They have money to them is no object, because they print the money, they create the
economic. You mean like the Illuminati you're talking about, right?
Well, that is... I don't consider them Illuminati at all. I just consider them a cabal of people. Even the word Illuminati is a word that's meant to disinform, just like the word conspiracy theory. You know, like illumination is the light body and the illumination of self. So they like to call Illuminati to themselves, so other people call them Illuminati, and they don't understand that really it is us who is illuminated, and it's us who search for the evolution of consciousness, who search for the light, and word definitions cannot lie to you, but they can try to change the perspective of words so we don't search for the right words to apply to ourselves.
That's a really, really great point, because they're anything but illuminated. They're actually the opposite of illuminated. They're sort of the things that keep people from being illuminated. But by calling themselves illuminated, people, they get confused.
They fear. They fear them. They give them power. They feed them power. But like the thing is that we have to find the power of illumination within ourselves. The power to speak. The power to be ourselves. To be our sovereign, joyous, happy selves. And that creates the space to awaken our family, to speak to each other, to co-create this habitat that we're now like venturing in.
Well, do you think, I mean, you and Donna, you've had these amazing, intense and maybe not so fun experiences, but do you think from your perspective, will we ever have a planet that will awaken to all this? Is it possible that we won't have a military industrial complex? I mean, do you really think that's
right? Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. The thing I see now with people is that they wish to like know knowledge. First, people find seeking, they'll seek. They're like, well, this is not all it's cracked up to be, and that's like the first step. And then they'll keep seeking within themselves. They'll go to the internet. They'll find out a bunch of stuff that's not really accurate, but they'll keep seeking. They'll become truthers. They'll find out, like, they'll be like 9/11 this or these conspiracy theories that. But if they keep seeking after that, they find themselves. They find the power of themselves to accept each other, and that creates a ripple effect that's stronger than any sort of control, because it changes the lives of our family. Mm. Our families are changed when we become these voices for truth. Our children are forever changed when we become these voices for truth. So if anything, my generation can shed the light of truth in this world, and then the next generation of my children will save it, because we're not going to be led to this thing continuously, because now we have the power of communication and the internet and self-education. Self-education is important because our education system is what's leading us to a state of materialistic depravity, that we don't know what we really are, that we're spiritual beings first and foremost having this experience.
Right. No, I believe you. I think really, I see like you really being able to help a lot of these people who are contemplating the military, these veterans who don't know what they, I mean, you can really have a whole industry, a job, you know, saving these people and teaching them about who they really are because of your awakening. I think that would be, I would really support you in doing that somehow.
Hey, thank you,
know?
You so much, Alan. Do you want to talk to Donna? I think she's better.
Yeah. Wait, before I talk to Donna, but Javier?
Yes.
No, I just want to ask you, like, what is, like, the most important or the biggest thing, like, you want to leave people with and share from your, you know, from your, like, what, are you 27 now or something?
26.
26, but you've seen so much and you have such great insight and wisdom, and you know, that's just growing and expanding as you expand. What do you want to leave people with, like, you know, what comments, final comments would you like to tell people about who they are and the essence of their being?
Okay, well, for one, thank you so much for having me, Alan, and that
I consider you a good friend, and I honor your journey, because you've been through something really amazing, and you've woken up to who you really are, and it's really beautiful. So yes, you're welcome.
Thank you. We can never lose hope in ourselves. Like, and that's what we're being shown a lot, is the losing hope in humanity, and that is what I try to emphasize the most, is that we cannot lose hope in ourselves, that, like, people are fighting because of this or that, but we can never lose hope in the evolution of ourselves, the evolution of consciousness, and that every generation is going to be the generation after the next, and we have to pass the torch to and give faith to the pattern that's going to emerge by us believing in ourselves and believing in each other, because we're so much more than this that they tell us that we are. We're so much more than the degradation of humanity that's put constantly on the news channel. We're so much more than what they make us feel that we are. We are eternally fractals of creation itself, and we're placed here to look at the stars, to marvel at the cosmos, and to, like, bless this beautiful earth with our enjoyment, to look at how beautiful a planet and how much of a paradise we've been put in. And even if we have done so many things, today is now, and then tomorrow is the next day, and if we live every day knowing that we're here to change the world, then it has to be, because this is the dream that we're placed upon, to be the saviors together, collectively, of this earth.
Wow. And we are, and we're doing it, especially you two. You two are doing it, for sure, because, you know, you have no choice, in a way. It's
None
been, like,
do.
Thrusted upon you. This is, like, you know, your vehicles for the awakening of that essence.
As are you. As we are.
I guess we're all in it together, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just like, you just helped me realize or see through your experience a whole realm that, you know, I had no idea about, you know. And, you know, in a way, you've done it for me, for a lot of people. You've had that experience, and I don't have to have it because I'm learning from your experience, you know. You've woken me up to that, so
and
thank you.
You have to your experience, and that's what we could do, Alan. That's what we could do, is wake each other up and believe in each other. We have to believe in each other and each other's experiences, and trust each other to be the guides that we're meant to be for each other.
Thank you. I believe. Thank you for saying that. Yes. Yes.
So here's Donna.
Oh, wait, Javier, what's your whole name? Javier what? Gonzalez?
Javier Gonzalez.
Okay. I just so people know who you are, and I think they'll be hearing more from you as you kind of go out into the world and start to really work with people and develop these spiritual ideas. They're going to hear from you.
Thank you. We'll try.
Okay.
Hello.
Are you okay, Donna?
Yeah, I'm okay. I actually
I'm always awed to hear that story again each time.
It is similar in some ways to what you experience, isn't it?
It's so different but so similar. It's almost unbelievable. I think that we all have to go through some kind of a crucifixion, which then awakens us.
Wow. I think maybe the planet is going through that now.
Yeah, I think so too. I really believe that now. I'm even feeling it palpably in every day, everywhere I go. I'm seeing it. I believe it.
Well, your life, your world is sort of magic in a way. And now, you know, you go through these amazing, you know, gatherings, and you know such, you know, great people. And it is, would you say, sort of magical that way?
Definitely, yes. That's all very new. It started just in the last few months. and it's just, even from the time I've known you, and a lot of your friends and a lot of our common friends, and so much magic has been happening. It starts with the little synchronicities, which at first just seem unbelievable. Then they happen so frequently that they just, I can't even explain, they just become... I've learned how to manifest and how to manipulate the universe a little bit. I'm still learning, but this white magic, it's so real, and it's
wow. Well, it's an amazing experience that you... will you ever go back to nursing? Are you complete with that, you feel?
I don't think that there could it. I could never work for a corporation again. I would never throw myself into a system like that ever again. But I definitely will dedicate my life to healing in some way, but it probably won't be being a registered nurse. Right.
No, but are you saying hospitals are really corporations? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they are.
They are corporations. They're not run by city or governments. They're private institutions.
CEOs, boards of directors, some are government. I mean, even government is corporation now. It's all one and the same.
I mean, like Javier, you know, has a great mission. I mean, if he does to reform the military, change that thinking. I mean, is it possible we can transform the healthcare system as well? And is that even bigger than the military? And somehow, it's more stuck.
I think it's possible. I think that it has to. It has to come from within. I mean, people have to awaken to the reality of the system, to what's really happening, and I believe it's possible through the evolution of consciousness. The more people that awaken and realize, the more people that find the truth in themselves and the voice to speak up, it's absolutely possible. I have to believe that.
I choose to believe it too, but
Javier just told me to say it's the domino effect of consciousness.
I think you're right. There is something to that. I think there is a domino effect. I mean, we see it. The more and more people seem to be waking up. I mean, it's sort of a miracle, isn't it? That's like, you know, both of you, like maybe you were 5 years ago, totally different people. Asleep with no awareness of, maybe you were spiritual, but no awareness that there was a whole subculture emerging. And now you're like pioneers in a field. You know, you were mainstream people, military and nurse, and boom, suddenly you're on the front lines in a different way, you know?
It's the greatest thing that has ever happened to me.
And so because it happened to you, and you were pretty normal, and both of you in some ways typical, like maybe it can happen to everyone.
I believe so. I believe that is the destination of humanity, is to awaken. I think we're entering a golden age, and I think that it's going to be magical, and we're going to discover powers far beyond our physical capacities. Our mind powers are going to expand, and a whole new way of existence for humanity will unfold. And I think it's exciting and magical, and I'm thrilled to be alive today.
And you know, in a way, you have your suffering to thank for it. Not that, you know, I'm sorry you suffered, but you have all that knowledge because you went through such a very difficult period. I mean, it was, you know.
I guess, I don't know. I get some say that is one of, I don't know if it's a rule, but I've heard that one path to awakening is through pain and suffering. I don't believe that that's the only path. I think there are probably much easier ways. I think that it's, but I wouldn't change it for anything. It's all been an amazing gift, and it's my life, so I can only choose to love it, and I do.
And you're also complete with it. I don't think you have to ever have that kind of thing again. You've done it. Yeah. You know what it is like.
Yeah, it's an amazing. It's amazing to be where I am now. When I look back now, I don't feel that I suffered. Back then, I may have thought I was suffering, but I was evolving, actually. Mm.
And you were evolving out of a very stuck place, in a way, because you were so, you know, this is who you were. Like you said, you know, you were so identified with your job and your name, your countries, your language, you know, that was, and, you know, it took a lot to rip that away, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's always been inherent in me. I think that's why I struggled with religion when I was younger. I think I struggled generally with a lot of things that were considered normal and just conforming.
But I think everyone, if they tune in, probably really, or maybe not. I mean, I have brothers that's pretty normal, and they love fitting in, and they love just doing what they're supposed to do. But
yes,
you know,
same.
But and that's okay. That's their experience, yeah. and they value that. And I'm not going to take that away from them because that's what they know, you know. But it's not something. I want more. I know there's more.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
And you know, when you seek, you do find. If you know there's more and you start looking, you actually find it, you know? It really does awaken. It really is. If you believe in magic, you really find magic in the world.
Yes, totally.
What's that?
That which you seek is seeking you.
Yeah, I love that quote. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if you don't believe in magic, then you're not going to find it.
That's true. I wish everybody could find magic.
You wish everyone could what?
I wish everyone could and would find magic in their lives. And they will.
But how do you suggest that they go about doing that?
It's from the soul. It comes from the soul, and I think that at a point our souls will search for the truth, and search for the self, and all everything comes from finding the self, finding out your true, who you really are, and not your false identity.
Right. No, I appreciate you saying that, because I think it's very powerful, considering you didn't even think there was such a thing as a soul or some internal part of ourselves. But I think you're right. You were going into that a little bit. What was it in that meditation that you started to do with this shaman you were working with that made you realize there was this eternal part?
I think it was, he would do these ceremonies called pujas, which is a Hindu tradition, and we would sit around a bonfire and we would throw rice and spices and limes and coconuts into the fire and we would watch it burn, and we would do it every day, and then at the end we would I really can't explain it. There was something about taking living things like a lime or a coconut and throwing it into a fire and sitting around and watching it burn, and then looking around and seeing the trees and the grass and seeing that everything's still alive. It was like, it's like everything is just a continuum. Life and death. Life equals death. Death equals life. Everything is continuous. Nothing is like a seeming... Even myself, like, I'm just, I don't know where I didn't know where I came from, and I don't know where I will go before and after I die, but I know that I'm not just, like a disconnected part of the universe. I'm intrinsically and inherently a part of this universe forever, in whatever form I take. This kind of began through these ceremonies that we did.
You know that now. You absolutely know it.
Oh, I live it. I look at everyone and I only wish they knew it too. But it's beyond, it's my own, the only truth that there is for me now.
So it's not about a god or anything like that or some kind of religion. It's about an awareness that you have.
Yeah.
I think you should take nurses that and go out into the do fires with them, you know.
Yeah, I would love to.
It would be great. You and Javier could do your reformed nurses and military program with people, you know.
Would you come along?
Yeah, I'd love to be part of that. I mean, because I think, you know, what you're talking about and Javier is the reason I do this show, because more people need to talk about this and we need to wake each other up. You're waking me up, you know, and you're also waking up people who may even know there's all this is possible. But yet, the more we talk about it together, the more we're building a culture of awareness or something's gelling within the collective mind. We need to talk about it. We need to tell these stories. We need to talk about our awakenings because it brings other people out. That's what I think.
Yes, I agree. Exactly.
Thank you for you spending some time with me here.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much. Sorry about my coughing.
No, don't be sorry. I wouldn't have been able to talk to Javier.
I'm also still learning to articulate all these things. It's still early days for me actually speaking about all these things. And it's one thing to experience it. It's another thing to put it into words.
The thing about it is that's why we need to speak about it, because some of these feelings and experiences actually don't have words. The ideas have yet to be articulated in a language.
Yeah, I find that when you or anyone asks me, you know, how did this shift happen, or how did you find yourself. It's very hard for me to even explain to people. It's very difficult to articulate.
But it's good if you do articulate without, of course, getting attached to the story because it's unfolding. But when you articulate it, it's sort of like the paintings of Alex Gray. You know, he just did these things and he articulated or expressed things that people were feeling, but they didn't know they were feeling. So by doing these multidimensional images, he was able to have people feel or put an image to what was going on with them. And they say, oh, yeah, that's what's going on with me. So, and that's sort of what I'm really interested in doing in building a new culture, these articulations of expression in words or images or music or song, whatever way is building a reference points for these new experiences to take hold and be shared among more people.
I'm really happy that you're committed to doing this work, and it's inspiring to me. And I hope that I could do something similar. I don't know about necessarily talking on the radio, but I would love to dedicate my life to spreading and raising consciousness.
Well, I think you have that. You can't turn back now.
Yeah, it's great. It's like the greatest journey. I'm so grateful.
But when you say you're glad, I don't feel dedicated in that sense. I feel like this is really what I want to do because I want to know. I'm doing it because I want to know, and I want to share that understanding with whoever wants to listen. But I'm doing it because, I'm dedicated to knowledge in a sense. But it's really because it's all so curious and fascinating, and there's something going on here that I think hasn't gone on before in this kind of public way.
Yeah.
I mean that's why I hope to interview Matt Kahn. You turned me on to him, Matt Kahn. I think I'll try to interview him in the next couple of weeks because he's really getting downloads of information of this transformation and people like Alex Gray. And so it's just like spreading the word of, more of ourselves coming online.
Matt Kahn is really incredible to listen to. I've watched a few of his videos now.
I like him too. He has a, because I think what you're talking about, what I'm saying, what Javier's saying is this seed of ascension that seems to be growing and blossoming.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. So is there anything you'd like to leave people with? Final words before we hang up, and
my own personal story. Anyone who's listening, who's in any kind of situation where they're confronted with speaking up the truth or risking anything, losing their job, being unpopular, being anything, always, I just believe it's always speak the truth. Be the truth. Be the vessel of the truth. I believe that is the only way to exist in harmony with this universe is to speak the truth. It's my commitment to the rest of my life and to spread that word.
And even if it goes against the whole company or corporation or army or the words.
Especially if it goes against. To be the one who has to be fearless, to have no fear, to trust in God, to trust in Source, to trust in the light, to trust in the universe. The universe will always support you when you speak the truth. Even basic kinesiology teaches us this, and that's that's what I'd like to leave everyone with. Mm-hmm. And I want to say thank you for having me on your show. I'm so grateful. And for Javier as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you both, Javier Gonzalez and Donna Novak. I appreciate your dedication too. So anyway, thanks for being a guest. And I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay, Donna?
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate you sharing your story. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And those are just two people that, you know, have made amazing breakthroughs that are waking up so many other people because of their commitment to themselves and truth. So it was a really inspiring for me to hear them tell their stories. So if you want to reach me, I'm at newrealities.com. If you want to talk to Donna and Javier, I can put you in touch with them. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And thanks for listening. And stay tuned next week. And thank you, BBS Radio. Good night.